Welcome to an enlightening podcast from IslamPodcasts.com. We encourage our listeners to please comment and let us know how we can grow in our knowledge to better serve our community. Please remind your family and friends to also visit IslamPodcasts.com for engaging discussions on current events, Islamic guidance, Quran, tafsir, seerah, and much more. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Podcasts on current events, Islamic guidance, Quran tafsir, and seerah are available at islampodcasts.com as well as on iTunes. Rate, review, and comment and let us know how we can grow in our knowledge to better serve our community. Please subscribe, share, and tell a friend about islampodcasts.com as well as rate, review of iTunes.
It's true. When we consider the problem of Syria, is that it's a matter of politics and it's a matter of life and death. What I'd like to do tonight is to suggest to you ways of perhaps analysing this problem of life and death. I don't propose a solution, but I do offer a particular analysis. Firstly, we should consider, I suppose, the events in Syria as quickly as they move and as bloody as they are in, I suppose, a wider context. And I'd suggest to you that context might be the Arab Spring. Now, we know how, in a sense, events unfolded in Tunisia and Egypt and Yemen and Morocco. But Syria, in a sense, is a different case altogether, I'd suggest. An earlier speaker suggested the problem of massacre, a recent massacre. As you'd appreciate, there have been innumerable massacres in Syria. Indeed, one can go back to the early 1980s and consider what happened in a provincial town in Syria where Hafez al-Bashar and his regime slaughtered 20,000 or more, if you want, Syrians. This really established effectively the regime, and from that period onward, people, as an earlier speaker suggested, people in Syria knew what it was like to live under, if you want, a police state. Syria, too, is not unrepresentative of the Middle East in that sense. That is, many of these states have these authoritarian, almost police-like forms. However, when we consider the question of Syria and the Arab Spring, what we should not overlook is, I suppose, outside intervention. Indeed, I'd suggest when one considers what is emerging in Syria, it's descending, obviously, into a civil war. One could look at its origins and suggest they might be economic and political. You would appreciate that Syria in the 1970s was a country of 4 million. Now it's a country, if we can overlook, if you want, the numbers of people who'd been slaughtered, it was a country of perhaps 24 million. What has emerged is an enormous number of young Syrians. Often these young Syrian men and women can find no work. And this is not unusual when one considers to the various other regimes in the Middle East. And I'd suggest this problem and the possibility of no political expression. Of course, in Syria, you'll appreciate, under the Ba'athists, there was religious tolerance of a kind, but never if you want, political tolerance. It would always be silenced. It would be those who practiced it would be tortured or they would disappear. The point to note when one looks at the emerging and cascading, if you want, problems in Syria are certainly found within the bounds of Syria, but they're also found beyond them. What I'm trying to suggest to you is that once in Homs, when the civilians were massacred, what emerged over time, and you'll appreciate this, events have moved exceedingly quickly, is that what has emerged is a form of relatively ineffective, an irregular military confrontations. Of course, when one looks at the state of Syria and its armed opponents, it's a totally unequal struggle. That is, the state, the Syrian state, has a monopoly of force. It, as you've appreciated, will carry out with due dexterity, if you want, war effectively, annihilation of its people. This is one thing. What one also should appreciate too is why this regime is bent on this course and why I'd suggest there'll be little international intervention forthcoming. As you'll appreciate, strangely enough, the United States and the European Union are great, if you want, moral determiners, aren't they, in relation to Syria? And the problems, the massacres that have occurred in Syria within these last months, if not the past year. And yet, unlike Libya, there is no attempt to intervene. Why is this? Partly because, in a sense, the former Soviet Union and Russia has been a major military supplier of the Syrian forces. And moreover, unlike other, if you want, regimes in the Middle East, Syria poses a far greater problem than Iraq or indeed Gaddafi's Libya. The point, too, should be noted in relation to Syria is there's a real reluctance to carry out any kind of intervention in terms of attempting to save Syrian lives. It's a kind of benign indifference, but moralising that assists no one. I'd suggest that's partly to do with the reluctance by either NATO or indeed the United States to directly intervene. It hides behind the mantle, doesn't it, of the Security Council, where China and Russia, in a sense, refuse to agree to any kind of intervention in Syria. And so one could say the bloodshed, the uneven struggle, the irregular warfare continues, almost unabated. But it is interesting too that the way in which the Western media plays up this kind of, if you want, slaughter. It's willing, in a sense, to graphically illustrate and comment on this slaughter, but to do nothing in relation to the slaughter. More importantly, one has to consider here, and you may think this is an odd position to put, but I would suggest that both the United States and Israel believe this kind of, if you want, irregular, unconventional warfare, that is, by the state, the Syrian state, against its people, is acceptable. Is it because they're Arabs? Is it because they're Alawites? Is it because they're Sunni? Is it because they're Christian? Is it because they're Druze? Is it because they're Shia? I think all of those things are somewhat irrelevant. However, we have been told that it is a matter, isn't it, of some kind of sectarian strife, and this is how we should understand, if you want, events in Syria. What I'm suggesting to you is that there are greater interests at work in relation to events in Syria, and I suggest you need to consider both Tel Aviv and Washington, as well as Moscow and Beijing. That is, here we have effectively the possibility of the Balkanization, if you want, of the Syrian state. You remember here that it was easy enough to finally rid Iraq of Saddam Hussein, wasn't it? Eventually. Why is there a reluctance by, in a sense, the United States and its allies, its covert and overt allies in the UN or the EU, to intervene to, in a sense, end the slaughter in Syria? I'd suggest it has something to do with the breaking up of the Syrian state. The problem, in a sense, for outside powers, either particularly the United States or Israel or the EU or Russia or China, is can there be any negotiation for a replacement for Bashar al-Assad? Seemingly not. The opposition forces, and I'm glad the Syrian citizen mentioned this, what we should consider, in a sense, are those who are bearing, if you want, the struggle against the regime within Syria. I think we should concentrate on that and the possibilities of their achievements. But more importantly, we have to consider, in a sense, not so much the Free Syrian Army or those who presume to represent Syria, usually exiles outside of Syria, or defectors. In a sense, I'd suggest to you that the concern, particularly of the West and China and, if you want, of course, Russia, is not the Syrian people. It's, in a sense, who will replace Bashar al-Assad? Will it be, in a sense, acceptable to Israel? Will it be acceptable to the United States? Will it be acceptable to the other Western powers? And here, the real political struggle at a far higher level and twice removed is, will the Russia or China allow a replacement, in a sense, for Bashar al-Assad to be made? I think they're the critical questions. More importantly, or just as importantly, I think, in a sense, the breakup, the Balkanization, the possibility of not just the militarization of the Syrian state and the conflict, is seen with a degree of optimism on the part of Israel and, if you want, the United States. You'll remember that Bashar al-Assad and his father were willing, in a sense, to become, if you want, allies of the West. You'll remember during the period when Syria was one of a number of Arab countries that agreed in, if you want, Operation Desert Storm. You'll also remember, too, when, if you want, so-called insurgents were renditioned. Syria, just like Egypt, and just like Algeria and Morocco, were those areas in the Middle East and North Africa or the Maghreb, where those who were seen as enemy combatants were renditioned and, of course, tortured. So Syria, in a sense, has been a relatively acceptable ally until now. And the problem, I'd suggest to you, is that Bashar al-Assad is just like the father. Despite the pious arguments of trying to bring, in a sense, a greater tolerance to the regime or within Syria, the absolute opposite has occurred. Only this time, in a sense, whereas in the early 1980s, when 10,000 or more people could be slaughtered, the problem now is in Syria that the struggle is nationwide. And more importantly, the struggle isn't through words, it's through force of arms. And the difficulty here is the problem for, if you want, those who've taken up the gun against the Syrian regime's ability, in a sense, to maintain its hold over the Syrian people. One has to consider, too, how outside powers are at work to ensure that they will effect a particular kind of regime change that's acceptable to them. And that's where the contention is. The significant problem, I'd suggest, for Syria is obviously a matter of life and death, but one needs to look at it and analyse it and perhaps understand it in a much broader frame. And I suggest to you, it isn't so much the massacres. I think that they will continue. I don't think there will be any kind of, if you want, attempted settlement until finally, in a sense, it's at the behest largely of those forces that essentially will be railroaded by the West, particularly the United States, to bring about regime change that's acceptable to them. And I think that is one of the great tragedies of the Syrian regime, or the Syrian people, the Syrian state. These things, in a sense, I just put forward to you as a way of perhaps understanding the slaughter, the death, the carnage, the destruction, and why, in a sense, there has been no effort, in a sense, to intervene by the Western powers, the United States, or whoever. And principally, too, one has to consider the Syrian state in relation to Tehran, that is Iran, and Hezbollah. The problem always for the United States in its geostrategic hold over the Middle East, if we can put it that way, has been Syria. And the point I'd suggest to you is with a regime change with Bashar al-Assad gone, and with some acceptable, if you want, individual leader who's replaced the Ba'athist ruler. The point then will be that Iran will be more effectively isolated. You remember, if you want, those in Tel Aviv and also in Washington suggest that the road to Tehran is directly through Damascus. And I suggest to you that this is one of the reasons why Syria is literally aflame and there is no effective attempt to support, if you want, the armed opposition, whom are always outnumbered and always outgunned. And it's all very well to hear about the bleatings, if you want, from the United Nations. But the problem, as I suggested to you, that this state of Syria is too well armed and is too effectively supported, at least at this stage, by Russia and to a lesser degree China. China, partly because of natural gas supplies and oil supplies from Syria. Russia, not simply because of the small port that they have on the Syrian coast, but principally because it has been effectively a Cold War and post-war ally of Russia until this point. Once Russia and China, in a sense, perhaps yield, you'll see, I'd suggest, a regime change, and all the death and carnage will, in Syria, be for what? It will be for effectively the breakup of the Syrian state, the Balkanization of the Syrian state, perhaps, the weakening of, if you want, those forces, at least in the Middle East, particularly the Syrian state as it now exists, and Hezbollah. They will be isolated, as will Tehran. And it is interesting, isn't it? The country that has a nuclear arsenal that no one can ever investigate, ever, Israel, fears, in a sense, the possibility of Iran going nuclear. And who knows? Perhaps Israel may carry out, if you want, not just a computer virus attack on, Iranian state's efforts to establish either nuclear power. Who knows whether they have or will ever be able to achieve nuclear weapons. But it is interesting that when one considers what is happening in Syria, there are greater, I think, forces at work beyond the death and carnage that's already occurring in Syria. It's just one thing to consider when we are thinking about, if you want, what is it in fact happening in Syria. I'll leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Podcasts on current events, Islamic guidance, Quran tafsir, and Sira are available at islampodcasts.com, as well as on iTunes. Rate, review, and comment, and let us know how we can grow in our knowledge to better serve our community. Please subscribe, share, and tell a friend about islampodcasts.com.